It's your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC for 20 great years has the best OTR on our live streaming. And continue tuning in to the Radio Book Channel, along with the RTC Music Channel, all at oldtimeradiolisten.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the program. We have a mixed bag for you today. We're going to feature The Fred Allen Show and The Whistler and also Your Hit Parade. So we'll start off this time with Fred Allen, and the show is called How is a Housing Shortage Affecting You? This, of course, was from 1945, right after the war when all those guys came pouring back in and, well, things were in short supply. Apparently houses too. So here we go.
It isn't Gabriel Heater, kiddies.
The Fred Allen Show, with Fred's guests, Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy. Portland Hopper, Minerva Pius as Mrs. Nussbaum, the DeMarco sisters, and Al Goodman and his orchestra. And if anybody cares who I am, my name is Kenny Delmar. Ladies and gentlemen, since the war ended, we've all been waiting for the return of the things we've missed. Tonight, we bring you one of the things nobody's missed, and here he is, Fred Allen.
Thank you, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Well, Kenny, I've been away from radio quite a long time. I guess everything has changed.
No, Fred, things in radio are about the same.
Oh, really? About the same? Have they found out who the mystery chef is yet?
No.
They haven't? How about One Man's Family? Have there been any additions to one?
No, Fred.
What about Portia? Has she turned around yet?
No. Portia is still facing life.
In a rut, huh? Say, tell me, Kenny, is that old gentleman still on the air every week? You know the old fellow with the...
Oh, you mean just plain Bill?
No, Bill wasn't his name.
Pa Perkins?
No, not Pa Perkins.
Singing Sam?
No, not Singing Sam. You're warm, though. This old guy had a valet named Manchester of Portchester. I've been away so long.
Oh, you mean Jack Benny.
Jack Benny, the octogenarian. And how he can play it. He's the guy. Is he still on the air?
Oh, yes.
It's remarkable what those one-a-day vitamins can do. A guy his age.
Yeah, well, is Jack old?
Is he old? A friend of mine saw Mr. Benny in swimming this summer. He thought that Benny was wearing a blue corduroy suit.
And it wasn't a blue corduroy suit.
No. Benny is so old now, his veins are outside of his skin. His face has more wrinkles than a seersucker suit on the closing day of a revival. Almost didn't get that out. Well, if he really... Gosh, Portland, how did you... I heard you singing as the program opened. Awfully good. How did you sense I was back on the air again?
Mama heard a rumor. You know how fast bad news travels.
Oh, yeah. What's new, Portland?
I thought you might need some new jokes for your program.
Well, don't tell me that you have contrived some specimens of waggery.
Did you hear about the soldier who ate 5 dozen oysters and got discharged from the army?
Ate 5 dozen oysters and got discharged from the army?
Yes. He had 60 blue points.
Oh, fine. It wouldn't work with clams, would it? But, that joke... You know, that joke sounds like something off the bottom of Can You Top This?
Bombs fell on Japan, the emperor doesn't wear a crown.
No, what does the emperor wear?
An Adam's hat.
An Adam's hat. You should put dry ice on that joke instantly, Portland. It won't keep a minute. And speaking of minutes, any minute we'll be leaving now for Allen's Alley.
Oh, what is your question tonight?
Well, one of the greatest problems facing the country today, of course, is housing. Here in New York City, thousands of people are looking for places to live. And so our question is, how is the housing shortage affecting you?
Shall we go?
As one B-29 said to the other, let's take off. Ah, Portland, it sure is good to be back down here in Allen's Alley.
People still live here.
Well, there's only one way to find out. I'll knock at this first door again.
Somebody, I say somebody knocked. Who was it?
Pardon me, mister.
Senator Claghorn's the name. Claghorn, that is.
Senator Claghorn?
I'm from the South, the deep South.
From way down south.
Huh? Yeah, I'm so far down south that my family's treading water in the Gulf Stream.
Hey, that is south, isn't it?
Yeah, where I live, we call the people from Alabama Yankees.
Well, I don't know.
Don't butt in when a body's talking, son. Try listening. Try listening. You're bound to learn something.
Well, look, Senator.
Anything gets me down, it's two people trying to talk at the same time.
Well, I know, but...
I got the floor, son. Don't try no filibuster.
Now, look, Senator. What about the housing shortage down there in Washington?
I stop at a hotel.
Oh, you actually have a room?
What room?
You mean,
For $20 a day, they give me a chair in the lobby and a sleeping pill. Pill, that is.
What is the housing problem coming to, Senator?
There's only one solution.
And that is?
Close up the OPA.
Well, what will happen if we close the OPA?
There'll be millions of ceilings left over.
Yes?
You put four walls under them ceilings, you got houses. So long, son. So long, that is.
You know, I think the senator's got something there. Got something there. I wonder what a knock at this next door will bring.
Howdy, bub.
Oh. You're,
Titus Moody's my name.
Titus Moody?
Moody by name, Moody by nature.
Well, tell me, Mr. Moody, has the housing shortage bothered you any?
Yeah. That's why I had to leave the farm, bub.
Really?
Yeah. The land was so poor, you'd have to use 20 sacks of fertilizer to raise a tune on it.
Gosh.
Cows were so weak, they used to travel in pairs.
The cows had to travel in pairs?
Yeah. Took two cows to pull up a blade of grass.
The land was dry, was it?
Dry. I didn't see no water for 20 years.
20 years?
One day it rained.
Yes?
When the first drop of water hit me, I fainted.
Yes?
Yeah, they had to throw two buckets of dust in my face to bring me to.
Gosh, how did you cope with the housing problem, Titus?
Why, I ordered one of them two-room houses from Sears Roebuck, but it didn't help.
You mean when Sears Roebuck delivered the two-room house?
Sears was living in the front room and Roebuck was living in the back. So long, bub.
Well, if I... If farmers can't find houses, I guess traveling salesmen will just have to keep on traveling. And that brings us to another door.
No.
Oh, Mrs. Nussbaum.
You were expecting maybe Emperor Shapiro Hito?
Tell me, Mrs. Nussbaum, how do you feel about the housing shortage?
Thanks to the housing shortage, Today, Pansy Nussbaum is enjoying connubial bliss, if you'll pardon the expression.
Yes, about... Well, what happened? What happened, Mrs. Ann?
Is flocking to mine house relatives.
Relatives?
Blood relatives. Relatives without blood.
Say, you must have a full house.
Full? And the couch is sleeping two Rappaports, cousins.
Uh-huh.
And the dining room table is sleeping four Weinsteins.
All four of them on one table?
They are half-brothers. It is making only two.
Oh, well. I see.
In the bathtub is sleeping Ben Schwartz, an uncle.
Mm-hmm.
And top Uncle Ben is the little Pinker's boy. He is floating on the water.
Oh. The Pinker's boy is a good swimmer?
A human sturgeon.
Oh, really? Well, tell me, Mrs. Nussbaum, with all your relatives jamming the house, didn't your husband get mad?
Mad? One morning, Pierre is putting on his beret. He is taking his Molly Pecan records.
Took his pecan records with him, huh?
And he is stamping out.
Your husband left you?
For 2 weeks, I am a widow.
Well, what happened?
One night, is coming on the door and knocking. Pitter-pat, pitter-pat.
Pitter-pat. Your husband?
Mine, Pierre, is back.
Oh, it was true love. Pierre couldn't live without you.
Love, schmove. Pierre couldn't find a room.
Well, here we are near the end of the alley. I wonder who lives here.
Hello, hello, we're here to say hello. Not howdy do, not polly boo, but just hello.
Now, wait a minute, look. But just a minute, who are you boys?
We're McGee and McGee, we're songwriters.
What songs have you written?
Have you heard? We're looking for the guy that began the beginning to see if we can get him to stop it.
No.
Have you heard? When my baby smiles at me, I wish she'd put in her teeth.
Please. Tonight, it so happens we're discussing the housing shortage.
We just wrote a housing shortage song.
A housing song? How does it go?
Hit it, Sam.
The situation's serious. It may get worse by spring. We mean the housing shortage, and that is why we sing. East side, west side, all around Broadway. You can't find a place to live, no matter what you pay. Hotels and apartments are crowded everywhere you walk. If it gets any worse, we'll all be sleeping on the sidewalks of New York.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, meet the DeMarco sisters, five talented youngsters we are happy to welcome as a regular feature on our program. Tonight they sing for you, It's Gotta Be This or That, girls.
If you ain't wrong, you're right. If it ain't dark, it's light. If you ain't sure, you might. Gotta be this or that. If it ain't full, then it's blank. If you don't spend, then you bank. If it ain't Bing, it's Frank. Gotta be this or that. Who can it be if it ain't me? I know it's not your brother. Can't you see it's gotta be one way or the other? Tell me what I must know. If you don't like, I'll go. If it ain't
Al Goodman and his orchestra have just played June is Busting Out a Little Bit. There wasn't time enough for June to bust out all over. And now, what's the trouble, Portland? You look bewildered.
Well, I was just wondering, how did you get back into radio, Mr. Allen?
How did I get back?
You didn't work for a year.
Didn't work? Why, last year I was the backbone of Radio Portland incognito. For 2 months, I filled in when Bulldog Drummond had distemper. I can thank only one person for this job, Portland. Charlie McCarthy.
Charlie McCarthy?
Uh-huh. I heard the orchestra playing Edgar's theme song. On my way out, I heard voices, somebody arguing in one of the dressing rooms. Well, I put my ear to the keyhole. It was Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy. Edgar was saying...
That's the last straw, Charlie.
I'll keep your shirt on, Bergen.
Why, Charlie, the idea of you leaving me to go with Fred Allen, why, that's ridiculous.
Yeah?
Yes.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. This is my reward after I've given you the best years of my life.
Well, at your age, you should be glad to unload those years on anybody.
What has Fred Allen got that I haven't got?
Nothing. But he spends a little of it once in a while.
Well, if you think Allen pays higher wages, you're sadly mistaken.
His program went off the air because pellagra broke out among his cast. Allen isn't hiring me, Bergen. I'm hiring Allen.
Oh, I see.
If anybody's going to be underpaid, I will do the underpaid.
So you're going to have your own show?
You heard me. Your ears don't lap over.
Now, wait. Why, you little whippersnapper, you...
Ah, your father's mustache.
No, no, listen. I don't bother.
And then, Mr. Allen.
Well, I knew Charlie McCarthy was in the dressing room alone, so I opened the door. Mr. McCarthy. Psst, Mr. McCarthy.
It's no use crawling back, Bergen. Oh, it's you, Fred Allen.
Yeah.
Well, you're just the man I want to see.
Say, I heard the argument, Mr. McCarthy. What's on your mind?
Well, you need a job. I need a partner. What are we waiting for?
But Mr. McCarthy, Edgar's my friend.
Friend? Do you know what Bergen's been saying about you?
Why, no.
Bergen said you were so cheap that when you brought a pint of blood to the Red Cross, you made him give you a deposit on the bottle.
I'm cheap? Why, Bergen, with that pot belly?
Yeah.
He only raised that abdominal bulb so he could keep his pants up without having to buy suspenders.
Oh, Alan, you look better to me every minute. Boy, when I went through with that cheapskate.
Why, Bergen is tighter than the top olive in a bottle. He is over penurious, I sometimes say.
I like the word. I don't know what it means, but I like it.
I can break it up. You might understand part of it, Charlie.
I like it better. Those ready-to-wear suits he'd buy with two pair of pants. They need to have a tailor and make me a suit.
Oh, your suits were tailor-made.
Yeah, out of the second pair of pants, yeah.
You mean that suit you have on now was once a pair of Bergen's pants?
Well, look at the coat. The lapels have cuffs on them.
Lapels with cuffs,
yeah.
Sarah?
And all my coats have zippers down the back.
But, Mr. McCarthy, if we team up, do you think we can get any work?
Stick with me, Alan, and we'll go places in radio.
Oh, Mr. McCarthy.
Oh, come, come. Stop licking my hand.
With you, Mr. McCarthy, will I get laughs?
Well, Charlie knows the sponsor, and Charlie gets the laughs.
But, Mr. McCarthy, all my life I've been a comedian. I've gotten laughs.
If Henry Kaiser can reconvert, so can you.
Yes, sir, I promise not to get any laughs.
Yeah. When I started with Bergen, he promised not to get any laughs, too.
Oh, really?
Yes, and that's the only promise he ever kept.
Well, now that that's all settled, is there anything else, Charlie?
Well,
Charlie?
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. McCarthy.
Better.
It was a slip, honest, Mr. McCarthy. I didn't mean I just lost my head there for a second.
It's quite all right. It's quite all right. I'm not a snob, you understand. But I am the star of the program.
Yes, sir.
Yes, and between the star and the stooge, certain class distinctions must be observed.
Yes, master. I shall remember.
I'll be on your knee, it's true, but that's as far as the intimacy will go.
I understand. I'm the stooge, and I shall keep my place, sir.
That's better. It's nothing personal, you know, but this is radio, you see. It's dog eat dog.
I know, sir.
Yes. And I've just finished eating that Mexican hairless burger.
Sir, I give you a toast to the new Charlie McCarthy Show.
Good. McCarthy marches on.
Well, Portland, Charlie and I rehearsed our act all the next morning, and about 2 o'clock that afternoon...
Okay, I'll write down your names. Which one is Pick and which is Pat?
This will cost you your job, young lady.
Miss Goober, I'm a busy man.
Yes, Mr. Lane.
Call a conference. Get all my vice presidents here in my office immediately.
Yes, sir.
Yes, and when they get here, cancel the conference. Tell them I'm a busy man.
Yes, sir.
Where's my portable desk? It's supposed to be wheeled around in front of me. Hand me a desk, somebody. I'm a busy man.
Hello, Mr. Leaf.
Miss Goober, who are these people?
Mr. Leaf, don't you remember me?
Who said that? Who's talking?
It's me. I'm down here.
Oh.
Yeah, about that radio job, you know?
Sorry, Mayor LaGuardia, we're full up on news commentary.
Leave, you remember me, Charlie McCarthy.
Oh, yes, I met you with Edgar Bergen.
Yeah, yes, sir.
Bergen, what a comedian. If you're with Bergen, it's a deal. Miss Goober, give this boy a contract. I'm a busy man.
Yeah, Mr. Lee.
Yeah, yes?
I'm not exactly working with Bergen on this show.
No, Bergen, no contract. Throw these tramps out.
Yes. But we've got a great act, sir.
Yeah, Mr. Lee, give us a chance.
Out of my way. I'm a busy man. Miss Goober, I'm on my way someplace. Where am I going?
To auditions for your radio program.
Oh, yes, yes. I love to audition actors. Hand me my gun.
Here, sir.
Yeah. Clear the way. Stand back, everybody. I'm a busy man. Where's the door? Oh, here. I'm off.
Gad, he is a busy man.
Darn that closet. Where's the door? Oh, here. I'm off.
Come on, Alan. We'll do an audition, too, huh?
Great. Here's the audition room.
Quiet! Mr. Leaf is starting the audition.
All right, let's go. I'm a busy man. Start singing, you.
Kiss me again. Kiss me.
Who's next?
The three Fosdick sisters. Get going, girls.
Do you hear that whistle down the line on the extended speaker?
In Santa Fe.
Next.
Next.
Are you ready, Mr. McCarthy?
Alan, you know, I've been thinking, suppose we change the act a bit. You sit on my knee in front of me, huh?
No, you're the star, Mr. McCarthy. You sit in front the way we rehearsed it.
Yeah.
Next, who's holding up the audition? I'm a busy man.
Is your voice ready, Alan?
Okay.
Remember, keep weaving so he can't draw a steady bead.
Let's go, Mr. McCarthy. We're Alan and McCarthy. We're the life of every party. We'll cheer you folks with quips and jokes. It sure will make you laugh. Ha ha! And if you want a song with us, you can't go wrong. By the light of the silvery moon, we'll sit and spoon. We're the life of every party. We're Alan and McCarthy.
Say, Fred, my girl can't wear liquid stockings.
Well, why can't your girl wear liquid stockings, Mr. McCarthy?
Because she can't get her leg in the bottle.
We're Alan and McCarthy. We're the life of every party.
Stop!
Duck, Fred, the gun must have jammed.
Say, aren't you Fred Allen?
Yes, sir.
I need a man like you to take over my program. I'll call it the Fred Allen Show. Name your own price. I'm a busy man. Is it a deal, Allen?
Well, what about me here, Mr.?
Yes, what about my partner?
The little guy is out. He has no talent. I'm a busy man. Goodbye.
At last, back on the air.
Yeah.
The Fred Allen Show. Gosh, I'd better phone Portland and Al Goodman and call up the others.
Yeah, we really put it over, didn't we, partner?
Partner?
Yeah.
You heard what Mr. Leaf said.
Huh?
Scram, small fry.
Now, look, Fred, now.
Fred?
Yeah, I'm sorry, Mr. Allen. I've decided maybe we should sort of co-star on the show.
Co-star on the Fred Allen Show? You know radio. It's dog eat dog.
Yeah, but Mr. Allen...
Beat it before I throw a termite on you.
Yeah, but kind sir, I'm not going to leave you here.
No, I'm not going to leave you here. Here's your car fare home. A nickel. So long.
Yeah, a nickel. What did I step into this time? A nickel. There's only one thing I can do with a nickel. Oh, well, let's go, McCarthy. Hello? Mr. Bergen? Guess who this is? Yeah, now, wait a minute, Bergen. No, but you got to take me back. Now, please. Yeah. Well, I'll work for 50 cents a week. 25? I'll work for nothing. I'll pay you. I'll be your slave, Bergen. Listen, if you'll only take me back this one time...
Thank you.
Allen will be back again next week at the same time. This is the Armed Forces Radio Service.
Well, we've just heard the Fred Allen Show from 1945, and we're going to stay with 1945 for our next program, which is Your Hit Parade. And this is from Armed Forces Radio as well.
Here's your Hit Parade, a rebroadcast of the most popular songs in America, especially for you men and women in the armed forces of the United Nations. Your Hit Parade begins with number 5, fifth in the survey, sung by the Hit Paraders, The More I See You.
The more I see you, the more I want you. Somehow this feeling just grows and grows.
With every sigh, I become more mad about you.
More lost without you. And so it goes. Can you imagine how much I love you? The more I see you, as years go by, I know the only one for me can only be you. My arms won't free you, my heart won't try.
That was the number 5 song all over America this week, as determined by your Hit Parade survey, which checks the best sellers in sheet music and phonograph records, the songs most played on the air and by the automatic coin machine, the songs most requested of the nation's band leaders, an accurate, authentic tabulation of America's taste in popular music. Tonight, we welcome Joan Edwards, who returns from her vacation. Versus Lawrence Tibbett, a great all-time all-timer, I Got Plenty of Nothing.
Oh, I got plenty of nothing, nothing plenty for me. I got no car, got no mule, I got no misery. The folks with plenty of plenty got a lock on the door. If somebody's a-going to rob them, well, it's all a make and more. What's more? I got no lock on the door, that's the way to be. They can steal the rug from the floor, that's okay with me, cause the things that apply like the stars in the sky is what I see. Oh, I got plenty of nothing, and nothing plenty for me. I got my gal, I got my song, got heaven the whole day long. There's no use complaining. Got my gal, got my lord, got my song.
I got plenty of nothing and nothing's plenty for me. I got the sun, got the moon, I got the deep blue sea. The folks with plenty of plenty gotta pray all the day. Kings with plenty sure gotta worry how to keep the devil away.
I'd have fret about hell till the time arrive. Never worry long as I'm well. Never want to strive to be good, to be bad. What the hell, I stand on the Lord. Oh, I got plenty of nothing, and nothing's plenty for me. I got my gal, I got my song, got heaven the whole day long. There's no use complaining. Got my girl,
got
my lord,
got his lord,
got my soul.
The survey in eighth place. The Hit Paraders sing number 8, While You're Away. In the survey. Number 6, bell-bottom trousers.
Once there was a little girl who lived next to me, and she loved a sailor boy. He was only 3. Now he's on a battleship in his sailor suit. Just a great big sailor man, but he's awful cute. Bell-bottom trousers, coat of navy blue. She loves her sailor, and he loves her too. When much in love, happy as can be. Hand in hand they stroll along, they don't give a hoot. He won't let go of her hand even to salute. Bell-bottom trousers, coat of navy blue. She loves her sailor and he loves her too. When her sailor boy's away on the ocean blue, soldier boys all flirt with her, but to him she's true. Though they smile and tip their caps and they wink their eyes, she just smiles and shakes her head and then she softly sighs. Hopeful he will soon come home safe again, so they can get married and raise a family, dress up all their kiddies in sailor's dungarees. Bell-bottom trousers, coat of navy blue. She loves her sailor boy and he loves her too. He's got bell-bottom trousers, coat of navy blue. She loves her sailor.
An all-time, all-timer that's always in style, Alabama Bound. Survey says number 7. Joan Edwards sings the 7th place song, There I've Said It Again.
I love you, there's nothing to hide. It's better than burning inside. I love you, no use to pretend. There I've said it again. What more can I say? Believe me, there's no other way. I love you, I will to the end. There I've said it again. I've tried to drum up a phrase that would sum up all that I feel for you. But what good are phrases? The thought that amazes is you love me, and it's heavenly. Forgive me for wanting you so. There's one thing I want you to know. I've loved you since heaven knows when. There, I said it again.
Survey's ninth place song, new on your hit parade. The hit parade is the number 9, Bahia. Your hit parade continues with number 4. Joan Edwards sings the survey's fourth place tune, You Belong to My Heart.
You belong to my heart, now and forever, and our love had its start not long ago. We were gathering stars while a million guitars played our love song. When I said I love you, every beat of my heart said it too. Was a moment like this? Do you remember? And your eyes through a kiss when they met mine. Now we own all the stars, and a million guitars are still playing. Darling, you are this song, and you'll always belong to my
determined by your hit parade survey. And here they are. Number 3, the survey's third place song, the Hit Paraders with Dreams.
Dream when you're feeling blue. Dream, that's the thing to do. Smoke rings rise in the air.
Oh, you'll find your share.
Number two, second place in the survey, Joan Edwards sings Laura.
The laugh that floats on a summer night that you can never quite recall. And we'll see Laura on the train that is passing through. They seem. She gave your very first kiss to you. That was Laura, but she's only a dream.
Song at the top of the survey, at the very head of your hit parade. Lawrence Tibbett sings number one, Sentimental Journey.
Gonna take a sentimental journey, gonna set my heart at ease, gonna make a sentimental journey to renew old memories. Got my bag, I got my reservation, spent each dime I could afford. Like a child in wild anticipation, long to hear that all about. Heaven, that's the time we leave at seven. I'll be waiting up for heaven. Takes me back. Never thought my heart could be so yearning. Why did I decide to roam? Gonna take this sentimental journey, sentimental journey home.
This is the Armed Forces Radio Service.
Okay, we've arrived at the final part of our program. We have one more show to put on for you today, and this one is maybe a scary one. This is The Whistler and Triple Cross. This is from 1951.
And now stay tuned for the mystery program that is unique among all mystery programs. Because even when you know who is guilty, you always receive a startling surprise at the final curtain. In the Signal Oil program, The Whistler. Signal, the famous Go Farther gasoline, invites you to sit back and enjoy another strange story by The Whistler.
I am The Whistler, and I know many things, for I walk by night. I know many strange tales hidden in the hearts of men and women who have stepped into the shadows. Yes, I know the nameless terrors of which they dare not speak.
And now for the Signal Oil Company, The Whistler's strange story, Triple Cross.
Ted Lucas stopped walking as the lights over the entrance of a small apartment building highlighted on the words El Congo. The expression on his tight-drawn face seemed to relax a little. He drew in his breath, then walked rapidly to the doorway, and inside, paused at the directory. There he ran his finger down the posted list of names until...
Claire Henderson, apartment 214. Well, baby, I finally found you.
Yes, Ted, you found her. After 6 months of running, hiding, you've decided to do the one thing Claire wouldn't expect you to do. Come out of hiding and find her, and make her pay for what she's done to you. You take the stairs to the second floor, follow the hall to apartment 214, and ring the bell.
Come in, Jeff. The door's unlocked. You're early, darling. I'm just making a drink.
No, you are early, Jeff. I thought you...
Wrong on two counts, baby. I'm not Jeff, and I'm not early. I'm about 6 months late.
Ted Lucas.
What's the matter, Claire? Aren't you glad to see me?
Well, I... Ted,
Oh, you're just disappointed because I'm not Jeff.
But how
How'd
did
I
you...
find you? I just looked. Yeah, thanks. I think I will sit down. Ah, oh, it's a nice little farm you have here. You must grow a lot of berries, huh?
Why, have a pretty good job.
I bet you do. Claire Henderson, working girl. Where do you work? I should say who, huh?
I'm secretary to Charles Seaton.
Oh, the diamond importer.
That's right.
Well, well. This is very clever of you. No wonder you got a layout like this. The old man probably gives you a sack of old diamonds every now and then, huh? Or maybe my 30 grand brought all this fancy stuff.
You think I'd be stupid enough to spend your money, Ted?
It had occurred to me.
But I didn't. Really, I've been worried about you ever since you left.
Oh, you sounded worried when I got here. Come in, Jeff. The door's unlocked. I'm just mixing drinks.
But I have been worried, Ted.
Oh, so worried you couldn't even get in touch with me, huh? So concerned about me, you wouldn't even send me my share of that payroll job we pulled. Come on, Claire, that was a $60,000 knockoff. Where's my hat?
Well, I was afraid to send it. The police were looking
Very
for you.
Very smooth, baby. That's why I didn't take my cut that night, remember? So if the law caught up with me, I wouldn't have the money on me. You, Miss Mastermind, had it. The whole 60 grand. You were supposed to send me half. Man, what a chump I was.
Ted, you're all wrong.
You had 3 months to send me that 30,000 while I was at that little spot near the border. You had my address. You didn't send it.
But, Ted, I...
You knew I'd figure I couldn't stay in one place very long. And you figured I'd be afraid to come back here. Well, I want my 30 grand. I want it fast.
Of course you do, and I've kept it for you.
You've what?
I said I've kept your half of the money for you.
Yeah? When do I get it?
Tomorrow morning, as soon as the bank opens.
Tomorrow morning, as soon as the bank opens.
Now, there's just one thing about it.
Oh, I thought that. What's the catch?
No catch. With my connections, working for Mr. Seaton, I had a chance to make a good investment in diamonds a couple of months back. I bought $30,000 worth for you. They're in my safety deposit box.
Now, wasn't that thoughtful of me?
Mm-hmm. More thoughtful than you realize. The diamond market's jumped a little since then. You'll make a little profit when you cash them in.
You know, there's something wrong with this, Claire. I don't know what it is yet, but I...
But you still don't trust me. It's not hard to understand, Ted. You decided months ago I double-crossed you. You thought about nothing else since then. Now you've found out I haven't, and you just can't believe it, that's all.
I don't get this sudden interest in my welfare.
You've a very short memory, Ted. I'm no different than I was when you left. Can't you remember how I was then?
I was so sure you'd run out on me. I still don't get it.
You won't have to wait much longer to know, Ted. Just meet me at the bank tomorrow morning at 10.
I won't have to meet you, Claire. I'll be with you.
Hmm? What do you mean?
I'm staying here tonight, on that couch there in the living room. Yeah, oh, it isn't that I don't trust you. It's just that, well, it took me so long to find you. I just can't stand to let you out of my sight.
Jen!
Well, that's five straight games you won. Looks like you can beat me at any game, huh?
Ted, it's getting late.
Oh, don't let me keep you up. Anytime you feel like turning in for the night, you go right ahead.
But you...
I told you, I'm staying. After the places I've been sleeping, the couch looks like the governor's suite to me. Say, Claire, I'm still wondering what happened to your boyfriend, Jeff. He, sort of stood you up tonight, huh?
Looks like it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
He's nobody, Ted. Just a guy. You're all a boyfriend, I mean.
Go on, hit the hay, Claire. This is a business call. Pure business.
Okay, Ted. That's the way you want it. I'll see you in the morning.
You sure will. Oh. Oh.
You stare at the front door of the apartment in startled silence. Your first impulse is to answer the door, isn't it, Ted? But you quickly realize you can't be seen. Could be only Jeff, Claire's date for the evening. But it might be someone else, Ted. You realize you might have been followed. The police could have picked up your trail and want to talk about the payroll robbery. You move quickly through the apartment to the kitchen. There you find a service entrance into the main hall. Silently, you open the door, peer out at the figure standing with his back to you at Claire's front door. Just a man in a dark suit, Ted. Nothing distinguishing about him. But you take a good long look at him, then close the door noiselessly. And in a short time, you hear his footsteps fading down the hall.
Dan, say, where are you?
In the kitchen, Claire. You got any milk?
In the refrigerator. Did I hear a knock on the door?
No, I hit a table on the way to the kitchen.
Oh. Well, good night, Ted.
Night.
You wait in the kitchen until you hear Claire go into the bedroom and close the door. You're still not sure of her, are you, Ted? The man at the door was probably Jeff, Claire's friend, but you don't know. You return to the living room, systematically turn off all the lights, then move for the front window, which overlooks the street. It's almost deserted, isn't it, Ted? And then your eye catches the figure of a man standing across the street, leaning against the lamppost and looking up toward Claire's apartment.
Same guy. Same guy who was here.
This is Cupid Miller, Marvin Miller, with a message especially for lovers. After all, folks who have never been in love wouldn't know how it feels to fall in love. And the signal product I want to talk with you about tonight is going to make you fall in love all over again with your car. I'm referring to Signal Ethyl, the premium grade of Signal's famous Go Farther gasoline. You'll experience your first love when you touch the starter, and your motor springs to life instantly with Signal Ethyl. You'll know it's really love when you discover the peppy pickup of Signal Ethyl. And you'll agree, Signal Ethyl is your one love when you see how its smooth, silent power rockets your car uphill without shifting or pinging. You want to know the reason for all this amour? Like any true sweetheart, this sweetheart of a gasoline brings out the best in any car of any age. So why not show your car that you really care? Treat it to a tank full of the best tomorrow. You and your car will love Signal Ethyl.
You're puzzled, aren't you, Ted? Strangely puzzled. Yes, and afraid, too. You've learned to be wary in the 6 months you've been hiding, after the payroll robbery which you and Claire Henderson planned and carried out. But it's more than that now, isn't it, Ted? Everything about your return seems strange, ominous. First, it was Claire, calmly announcing that she hadn't spent your $30,000 cut at all, that she'd invested it in diamonds for you, and that you'd even make a profit. Then that knock on the door, the man in the dark suit who later took up a post across the street and watched Claire's apartment. You don't know who he is, do you, Ted, or what he wants? All through the long night you sit there in the darkness of Claire's living room, turning the whole situation over in your mind. Shortly before morning you doze off. It's nearly 10 o'clock when you awake with a start.
Ted?
Huh? What?
Wake up!
Oh, it's you, Claire. I must have fallen asleep.
But why sleep sitting up in a chair? I thought the couch impressed you.
I changed my mind. Hey, wait a minute.
What on earth's the matter with you, Ted? Who do you expect to see out of the window?
I don't know. Never mind. No one's out there now anyway. It's funny.
What?
Nothing. You ready?
Yeah.
Well, then come on. Let's do that bit at the bank where you deliver my $30,000 in diamonds.
Still don't trust me, do you?
No. Not yet.
All the way downtown in the taxi, you divide your time between studying Claire and trying to determine whether or not you're being followed. Finally satisfied that no one is trailing you, you try to reconcile Claire's smiling confidence with the fact that she's about to deliver to you $30,000 in diamonds. It doesn't make sense, does it, Ted? Even as the two of you enter the bank and walk to the safe deposit box section, you're still goaded with suspicion and distrust.
Stop looking so intense, Ted. If I didn't know better, I'd think you had plans to blow the bank up.
The bars over the vault make me nervous, and quit ad-libbing. Let's get this thing over with.
May I help you? Oh, hello, Miss Henderson.
Hello, I'd like to get into my safety deposit box, please.
Well, just sign a card, Miss Henderson.
You bet.
There we are. This way, please.
You don't mind waiting for me out here, do you, Ted?
Why should I? You've got to come out this way.
You look up with a sense of relief as Claire walks towards you, smilingly takes your arm, and the two of you walk from the bank and hail a taxi. After the cab's underway, Claire silently hands you a packet. You open it, find an impressive collection of diamonds inside.
Trust me now, Ted?
Mr. Seaton must be very proud of you.
What kind of a crack is that?
Well, if my trained eye is still in training, you have excellent taste in diamonds.
I have excellent taste, period.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but this calls for a drink, maybe, huh? Just maybe.
Before noon?
Time is relative. You got a particular hangout these days, or will the soothsayer do the trick?
I haven't been there.
6 months. Yeah, by an odd coincidence, neither have I. Hey, driver, drop us at the soothsayer's, will you?
I keep waiting for it, but I never hear it.
Waiting for and never hear what?
Your apology.
Apology? Just for thinking you double-crossed me?
Mm.
Hey, don't get carried away, doll. Just because I buy you a drink and flash you one of my better smiles, it doesn't mean I...
Ted, what's the matter?
It's that guy.
Hmm?
The same guy I saw last night.
What guy, Ted?
Now, listen, don't act like anything's wrong. Keep sipping your drink. When I give you a cue, take a look at the guy in the dark suit at the end of the bar. Tell me if you recognize him.
Okay.
Could be your boy Jeff, you know. Whoever he is, I'm pretty sure he's following me. There, see? He's looked away for a minute. Quick, you know him?
No. No, I don't, Ed.
You better be sure, baby. Because if that is your boyfriend and this is some kind of a trick,
It's no trick, Ted, honestly.
We'll see. Anyway, you better be rambling along. But you'll see me later, baby. That's a promise.
As Claire gets up, walks from the bar, you keep your eyes fastened on the man you feel certain is trailing you. You're certain this is the same man who knocked at Claire's door last night. And you're determined now to sell the diamonds before they cause you any more trouble. He's still standing with his back to you as you get up quickly, hurry unnoticed through the door behind you to the back hall, which leads to the rear entrance on an alleyway. Once there, you break into a dead run to the next corner and hurriedly hail a passing taxi. After a few blocks, you're certain you've lost the man you're sure was trailing you. You're driven to the office of an old friend.
Be with you in just a moment.
Hurry it up, Markle.
Okay. Well, Ted Lucas. Long time?
No, see. Look, are we alone?
Like lovers.
Mm.
Where you been, Ted? I haven't seen you since...
Since the last time, Markle. We really must get together and have a nice long chat real soon. Right now, I want you to wrap your good eye around that jeweler's glass and tell me a nice story about these.
Ah. You been heisting precious stones?
They're a gift. Come on, Markle, hurry it up.
Okay. Let's see now. You know what, Ted? These are diamonds. Real fine diamonds.
They are, huh? Now, that much is good. Now, how about
you? You got another friend like me, Ted?
What do you mean?
Where's the rest of the load? How come you're just trying to dump this much on me?
Well, this is all I've got. Come on, how much, Markle?
Now, look, don't try to chump me, Ted. Because if I unload these for you, I'll be doing you a big favor. Big.
What do you mean? What's wrong with them? You said they were fine stones.
They are. Fine and hot, too.
They're hot?
Plenty hot. This is only part of that Seaton job a couple of nights ago.
Seaton? Seaton, the diamond importers?
Yeah, Seaton's.
Oh.
Very smooth job, Teddy boy. You got the cops baffled, huh?
Listen, Markle, how much are they worth, these here?
Well, as they stand right now, about 35 grand.
Mm-hmm.
But to fence them, I'll have to cut them, and then they don't bring so much. Maybe only 20 or so.
I see.
You better level with me, Ted. Haul out the rest of that seat and load, and then maybe we can do business. But I won't handle any of it unless I handle it all. Too dangerous.
Yeah. Well, I guess you're right, Markle. Okay, I'll take these along and get the rest of the diamonds for you.
What, Ted?
Didn't expect to find you in, Claire. Or are you in just in the middle of packing?
Packing? I know what you're talking about. I just got home.
That's swell. So did I. Sit down.
Ted, what's...
Sit down! Wait. You know, I really admire you. You've really got talent.
I don't know what you're talking
about.
Took
me a while, baby, but I finally caught on for good this time. Telling me you worked at Seton's. Man, how you worked there.
But I did, Ted. I did. I quit a couple of weeks ago.
And maybe got $60,000-$75,000 in diamonds for severance pay? Sure you did. That's where your boy Jeff came in, isn't it? He probably did the dirty work for you, just like I did on the payroll job.
Ted, will you listen to
Ever
me
since
for a
Shai
moment?
Showed up, he's been dogging my trail. He was going to put me away for you, wasn't he, Bright Eyes?
Oh, no, Ted, nothing like that. Will you let me tell
okay,
you?
Okay, you tell me, and be quick.
All right, all right. We did do the Seton job, Jeff and I, but the rest of it isn't true. I had no idea you were anywhere around. Besides, you got your old cut. Those diamonds I gave you are worth at least $35,000.
Not when they're cut, and they got to be cut or Markle won't fence them. Now, where are the rest?
I don't have them, Ted. Jeff has them.
Not if I know you. He hasn't. You don't work that way.
No, Ted, I don't. This is the way I work.
Oh. You play with guns, too.
Huh? Oh, when I have to. Now, get out or I'll give you your real cut.
Sure, baby. I'll...
Ted!
I will play my way. Where do I find Jeff?
Listen,
Ted. Better talk fast, Claire.
Okay, okay. He's at the Denton Arms, apartment 107.
107 Denton Arms, huh? I hope you're telling the truth, baby. You better be. If not, I'll be back and pay you off. Really pay you off.
You take Claire's gun, leave the apartment, and then hurriedly double back to the service entrance to the kitchen and silently try the door. It opens. You slip noiselessly into the kitchen, just in time to hear Claire on the phone giving out all the information you need.
Yes, that's right. Now, please, don't ask any more questions. There isn't time. I tell you, we just left. Yes, he's on his way there right now. Hurry.
I thought you weren't going anywhere, baby.
Ted.
Warning your boyfriend I was coming to see him, huh?
Oh, no, Ted.
Figuring on making a quick getaway, weren't you? Pack everything and run for it.
Oh, no, Ted.
Last chance, baby. I want the rest of those diamonds.
I told you I don't have them.
Okay, baby. Have it your own way.
No. Ted, please, no.
Now I'll see your boyfriend at the Denton Arms.
After shooting Claire, you slip her gun into your pocket and hurry out the back way of the apartment. The Denton Arms is less than 3 blocks away, and you decide it's safer to walk the distance, swallowed up in the late afternoon traffic. Your confidence grows with each step. You'll get the diamonds now, Ted, all of them. Just one more obstacle in your way, Jeff. And you're certain that won't take long. Then you'll make a quick deal with Markle and leave town. You enter the side door of the Denton Arms, blink at the late afternoon darkness of the halls, make your way to apartment 107. You listen at the door, no sound. And then hearing a sound down the hall, you step quickly into a recess in the wall by the door. A man walks toward apartment 107, slows his pace just before he reaches it. It's the same man, isn't it, Ted? The man in the dark suit who's been following.
Okay, you're covered.
Hey, what is this?
We'll talk inside. It's cozier. And I'll give you a clue. We'll talk about diamonds.
Okay, if you say so.
Come on, open up.
Yes, I forgot my keys.
You're not very bright, are you? Try the knob. Maybe you left it unlocked. Inside. Now, smart boy, we're going to talk business. You and me.
Looks like you've got me.
You bet I have. I've got you just where I want you.
Stop it. Stop engine wear that can cut down your car's pep and power, cut down your gasoline mileage. Stop it! Stop engine wear that can make your car become an oil eater, make it need an expensive overhaul. How can you stop engine wear? Why, simply by changing oil, changing to Signal's amazing new premium motor oil that reduces engine wear due to lubrication 50%. Through newly perfected scientific developments, wonderful extra protection has been engineered into this superior quality new motor oil. New Signal Premium stops acid corrosion and rust, controls and reduces harmful engine deposits, keeps oil rings clean and free, keeps hydraulic valve lifters from sticking. Yet this heavy-duty type oil is yours to enjoy at regular price at Signal stations. No wonder more and more drivers with an eye to keeping performance up and costs down are changing to Signal's amazing new oil that reduces engine wear due to lubrication 50%. Changing at Signal stations. Have you changed yet to Signal?
Well, Ted, you're beginning to track down and overcome all the obstacles, aren't you? With Claire out of the way, shot with her own gun, you have now only to deal with Jeff, her accomplice, get the rest of the diamonds from him, and get out of town before anyone knows you've returned. You're certain you'll be able to contact Markle later and dispose of them. Now you've ushered the man who's been trailing you into apartment 107 of the Denton Arms at the point of Claire's gun. It's nearly dusk now, and you fumble with your free hand to turn on a lamp.
Okay, I haven't got much time. Let's have the diamonds.
What diamonds?
The Satan diamonds to match these I've got with me.
Okay. Just a minute. Hey, wait a minute. Look at this.
What is this?
You don't know? Looks very much like a corpse to me. Let's see now. The papers on him say, Jeff Healy. And he's really dead. Shot.
Jeff. He's Jeff.
As if you didn't know.
I didn't. I thought you were.
So this is where you came this afternoon when you got away from me,
No, I... Who are you?
Linton's the name. Detective Linton, Robbie Division. I'd better hand over that gun, Lucas. Thanks. That's better.
But I don't get it. You've been following me around.
Ever since I happened to see you go into the El Congo apartments the other night. Thought I'd see what you were up to before I talked to you about that payroll job. We think you pulled it about 6 months ago. Looks like you branched out since then, huh? Into diamonds and murder?
What are you talking about?
The Seton diamond job.
You're wrong. I didn't do that Seton job. It was a dame. Claire Henderson and this guy, Jeff Healy. She double-crossed me before. Now she's double-crossed him. Permanently.
Could be. But you were pretty sure Jeff had some more diamonds, Lucas. Well, there's none on him now. Maybe I better take a look around the apartment.
Won't do you any good. Claire Henderson, she had them even when I... How did you happen to come here? You said I'd shaken you off.
A woman called headquarters.
A woman?
Yeah. She said if we come to the Denton Arms, apartment 107, we'd find the Seton thief and a murderer. Looks like she was right.
She was phoning the cops, the little... I didn't do it, I tell you!
Maybe not. But if you got the diamonds on you, like you said, and if this gun is the one that killed Jeff here, you've got an awful lot of explaining to do.
I tell you, it was Claire Henderson. She was planning on skipping town and framing me.
Maybe she was at that. Look, I'll give you a break, Lucas. Suppose you take me over to see her, and we'll find out what she has to say,
Let that whistle be your signal for the Signal Oil program, The Whistler, each Sunday night at this same time. Meantime, Signal Oil Company and the friendly independent dealers who help you go farther with Signal gasoline hope you remember. Regardless of what gasoline you use, you'll enjoy more miles of happy driving if you drive at sensible speeds, obey traffic regulations, and avoid taking chances. You may even save a life, possibly your own. Featured in tonight's story were Bill Foreman, Gerald Moore, Betty Lou Gerson, Larry Blake, and Byron Kane. The Whistler was produced and directed by George W. Allen, with story by Nancy Cleveland, music by Wilbur Hatch, and was transmitted to our troops overseas by the Armed Forces Radio Service. The Whistler is entirely fictional, and all characters portrayed on The Whistler are also fictional. Any similarity of names or resemblance to persons living or dead is purely coincidental. Remember to tune in at the same time next Sunday for another strange story by The Whistler. Marvin Miller speaking for the Signal Oil Company. Stay tuned now for Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden, which follows immediately over most of these stations. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Well, that's it for this week, but join us next week when we'll do it all over again. Till then, this is Jim Dolan, thanking you for listening.